It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, everybody, welcome on into your Monday right here. It is Unrivaled on the Zone Sports Network. Scott Mitchell across from me, former NFL quarterback, big lefty, gets the bad view today here in the Zone Network studios here at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Our first time in studio.
What do you mean I get the
Scott?
Bad view?
Well, you're looking at me.
I don't know. I just go like this. I wasn't intending on looking at you.
You weren't going to look at me. You're going to turn your whole body around and just look out the window the whole time?
Talk to the hand right here. Here's the hand. Talk to the hand.
That's absolutely right. We've been on the road our first 3 days of doing Unrivaled on 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. We welcome you in. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, as we just said. We've got a lot to talk about. We have so many things to jump into. We're going to be talking with the coach, Gordy Chase, in just a few moments here. In the meantime, Scott, we're going to kick things off with a discussion about this Utah Jazz team who is looking extremely good after those first two games, although it seemed like a very, very chippy game against those Sacramento Kings, who everybody sort of looks at and goes, oh, yeah, the Kings, they haven't had a winning season in 12 years. They haven't had any sniff of the playoffs in the last 15 years. But everybody knew that there was a massive amount of talent. Everybody knew that it was going to be interesting to see Davion Mitchell versus Donovan Mitchell. And from a defensive—
No relation.
But from an actual, like, a defensive standpoint, the kid has got a lot of talent. A lot of ways to go when it comes to shooting, but he has got a lot of talent. And we're going to bring in right now for our Jazz Insider look at everything. He is the coach. Gordy Chiesa joining us on the program on Unrivaled here on the Zone Sports Network. Coach, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Coach's song. Oh, I love it. This is amazing. Coach, brought to you today by Divvy, the modern financial platform for business. See how you can spend smarter at getdivvy.com. That's getdivvy with two V's.com. Coach, impressions after two games. I'm guessing after two games you have everything figured out about this Jazz team.
Well, I know right now that they're a very talented group and that they've addressed some of their defensive issues as far as last year they got beat off the dribble, unfortunately, very consistently. However, in the first two games, there's a much better commitment, and it all starts with technique. And we call that a cushion defense where you press up into coverage and then you back off slightly and use your footwork and your length to become a challenge defender versus having no stance, lock need, and the player offensively goes by you off the dribble and it causes so much havoc and help them recover. So the Jazz have done a good job of that. The second thing the Jazz interesting is that their bigs have played tremendous. Rudy Gobert is having a absolutely sensational year, averaging 16.5 points per game, 20.5 rebounds. Are you kidding me as far as him going through the board?
And he kind of gets everything.
And Hassan Whiteside, who historically has been inconsistent his whole career. However, in this setting right now, at age 32, that he's played very well. He's absolutely a force in the lane when Rudy's out of the game. He's averaging 9.5 rebounds in 17 minutes. So it's interesting that as the Jazz struggle offensively shooting the ball, that their big guys are the opposite. They're scoring in traffic, but more importantly, they're really defending the lane tremendously. And those second-chance opportunities, hey, if we don't shoot straight in the game, let's get some offensive boards, and those two big guys have.
So you like the defense? It's better than it was a year ago. Rudy Gobert is playing at a higher level than he has been. What are your expectations for the Jazz this season?
Oh, the Jazz right now, Scott, are the best team in the West. Again, regular season is that I wrote down that they should be 56-26 as the first seed. And if you, I guess you're wondering, all those East Coast fans like I am, that the Miami Heat should be also, I believe, going to be the best record in the East. So I have the Jazz and Miami winning the regular season, and then it gets, Scott, very interesting when the playoffs start. It's a long time from now. I get
it. Well, that's all we care about is the playoffs. So,
yeah.
So
we got burned last year on the regular season, yeah. Coach.
Where
Alex,
are the Jazz
right.
in
no,
the playoffs?
Your point is well taken. And wherever I go, Scott and Alex, people tell me this, the same thing in the narrative. You just mentioned that, hey, this is about regular season, just about, pardon me, not about regular season. It's about playoff basketball. Because the Jazz are, they're not building anymore. This is their team. They're ready to go prime time. And that it all starts, as you know, Scott, so well, defense. You got to be able to defend the ball, and then you have to be able to score the ball. And that's based on components of passing, screening, cutting, early offense, broken plays, solo acts. It's not one thing, it's everything. And the Jets have a once-in-a-lifetime performer in Donovan Mitchell. However, he's struggling right now. Mm-hmm. And your segue about the Sacramento Kings, they did. The Sacramento Kings, they punched the Jazz in the face in that first half. And in the second half, the Jazz, to their credit, led by their bigs, by their big guys, is that the Jazz, they outscored them by 15 points in the second half, and it was that 15-6 run that got them going. But it started on defense and physicality.
Coach Gordy Chiesa joining us, our Jazz Insider today. And, Coach, I'm imagining you with your three-ring binder in front of you. Am I correct?
That is correct. Okay. Absolutely.
So they got the signature coach handwriting on the paper. So I want to know, when you look at this early in a season, like how much time do you give, you know, to teams to kind of – quote-unquote, figure things out, because you have camp and then you have, you know, the preseason games that are kind of a weird space, too, where you're trying to figure out some of these younger guys. And it was great to see Jared Butler have a nice preseason. But at what point do you start to go, all right, was it 10 games for you? Was it a dozen games? Was it 20 games in where you'd sometimes go, all right, now we're feeling like we're in a flow here? Because the Jazz have gotten off to quick starts the last two seasons now.
Oh, very much. So it's basically 20 games. At the 20-game mark, you know who you are as far as rotation-wise, and who's overachieving, who's underachieving, who has a bad attitude on the bench, who has a good attitude on the bench. So it takes about 20 games. In preseason, really, most players, the whole thing is, please, nobody get hurt. That's the truth.
Right.
Nobody, please, don't get hurt. Do not rip your Achilles in a meaningless game. And I say that sadly when I say it happens to people all the time. But with that said, 20 games in, you know who you are. And then starts, Alex, starts now, and Scott, the trading deadline looms into it. So it's 20 games, then it's Christmas, as far as Christmas, then it's New Year's, and then is the guaranteed contracts January 10th of every year, then a thing called the trading deadline. So there's so many components in an NBA schedule, and that the better teams, they're able to navigate it correctly because they don't panic, yet they're progressive. So it's the most amazing thing. So, for example, in Jazz basketball, that we'll know about them if they have – they struggle, just say for the narrative, and they're looking at they've got to get a certain position upgraded, then suddenly whose contract is up, et cetera, and what might happen.
Do you like the season actually starting later, like the Christmas start kind of from a year ago? Or as you're talking about all this, is it necessary to kind of figure out who your team is early on in the season? Where do you land on all of that?
I land on it right now. Quote, in the old days, Scott and Alex, the old days meaning what, 10 years ago, is that the opening night NBA was Halloween night. With all those,
right.
It was a great night as far as, you know, spooktacular, as far as they used to say that all the time. And it was fun. Now the NBA wants less back-to-backs because the TV partners don't like when, God forbid, star players sit out on a road game,
right.
Minus injury. And I get that. When you're paying X millions of dollars a year, you want to have everybody that the fans know about. You want them to play, and I get it. And also the players want to play. I'm simplifying it. They really do want to play. So they started 2 weeks earlier historically. They're trying to work with their partners as far as TV, but also their arena partners, meaning what? The NHL as far as hockey. So, again, most NBA, most teams, minus Utah and some of the smaller markets, is that they have a partner, meaning what? Hockey in their arena. So they try to work out the dates as far as but both teams can do it in less back-to-back games. So I do like the NBA season starting earlier because once you get summertime and a thing called Labor Day, when if you have young children or grandchildren that they start school with, say, give or take September, that starts a new school year and, by the way, a new season.
So Coach Gordy Chiesa joining us here on Unrivaled as we get going on this Jazz season, trying to figure out a little bit more of who this team is. Two games in, and you might be able to try to find some sort of patterns with these guys, but the reality is that it's a very different game tomorrow against the Denver Nuggets versus playing Oklahoma City the first game and then the Sacramento Kings the second. This is an Intermountain rival, and it's a team that is very, very good and has caused fits for the Jazz in the past. And Nikola Jokic and Rudy Gobert, two very different big men. What do you see tomorrow in the matchup with the Nuggets and the Jazz?
Well, the first thing is 8 o'clock start for all the Jazz fans, so it's on TNT. So please remember that 8 o'clock start. I like about Nikola Jokic. That guy, he's the reigning MVP. He's an incredible shot maker. I call him a footwork dancer. That's whether in perimeter or outside, or inside the lane, is that he's so slow that he's effective. See, most times, offensively, players guard themselves. They're being out of control. He's the opposite. No one can guard him because he's under control. And that's a huge thing about it as far as the matchup with Rudy Gobert. So the storyline should be, can Rudy have enough defensive prowess being in a stance and get up and play him, but still be able to cushion as far as staying in front of him because he has so many ball skills. Add to that, Jokic is, I call him a jumbo passer. So a lot of times when the Jazz or all teams, they play that switch defense where they switch 1 through 5, suddenly Jordan Clarkson, for the narrative, is guarding Jokic. And what Jokic does, absolutely sensational, he can, as a jumbo passer, he can pass over good defensive players over the top of them. So a huge factor for as far as that is that the defense, the help side, has got to be alert as far as playing. Here's some quick numbers as far as with Jokic this year. Are you kidding me? He's averaging 29.5 points per game, 65.9 field goal percentage. And remember, that's not all inside. That's not all inside. That's outside also. He's averaging 14.5 rebounds. So, again, the storyline could be, can Hassan Whiteside and Rudy Gobert, can they body up on Nikola Jokic and take away some of his rebounds in traffic? Again, what he is that he's a position rebounder, not a length rebounder. So he's like old school, that he plays in the lane on the ground versus what, going airborne and playing in the clouds. The last part about this, about him, is that with Jokic, I always talked about him, I call him a 7-foot combo between Larry Bird and Dirk Nowitzki. That's who he plays like. Nowitzki and Larry Bird as a 7-foot combo.
As a giant person, too. I mean, he's a massive dude.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've actually created a 3-ring binder here, taking notes on all this great stuff, Gordy. I'm curious, though. So this is a big game against Denver, but who is the biggest concern for the Jazz in the West this year? What team is going to give them the biggest challenge?
The Lakers, of course.
Come on, Gordy. The Lakers are over the hill.
I agree. I agree with that. Regular season.
I can guard LeBron. Come on.
The Lakers are going to limp, get to the line, finish in April, with so many guys injured, mixing so many missing games, etc. But they're a threat. When LeBron James is on your team, he's absolutely a threat in playoff games. When those big lights go on, he's ready to perform. And Anthony Davis also. Now the question is obviously with Lightning Rod Westbrook. So this is very similar to back when LeBron's first year with the Miami Heat back in 2014, where it was D. Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James. It took them about 20-something games to get themselves going as far as that. The coach is Eric Spoelstra, terrific coach. Now it's Frank Vogel's turn with the Lakers right now. So in the regular season, the Jazz are going to be terrific, but the Lakers will be a force in the playoffs as far as the seeding. Next part of that is that never count out the Nuggets. I know this tomorrow night's game because they'll get back Jamal Murray, who's absolutely, Donovan Mitchell's our arch rival in a good way. They're both of them are terrific young players, the same age group. They'll get him back around March 15th off that torn ACL.
Wow.
And so he'll have about a month to try to not get up to speed but be more comfortable playing. And then also the Clippers. I know they had a slow start right now. Paul George has played absolutely great right now. And they get Kawhi back again sometime in April. He won't be the same Kawhi that led the Raptors to the NBA championship in 2019, but he'll be a valued player as they go far in the playoffs.
Coach, did you see that little dust-up on the bench between Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis on the Lakers bench?
Yes.
The back and forth. I would assume that that happens a lot more than we probably talk. Certainly, it happens a lot more probably in practice than it would on the big stage on TV with the Lakers. But when that happens, do you write it off as that's just part of the business? These guys get fired up and they get, or is it one of those things that you go, nope, there's a chemistry problem already, and sign off the Lakers for another problem in the locker room type team?
No, most times it's based on personality, but most times it happened in practice, that same fight probably a week ago. So as far as intensity, as far as that, usually speaking is that I call it the blame game, where you're supposed to switch on defense and take this guy, and I'm supposed to rotate out to this corner, and we didn't. Or, hey, by the way, I'm open in the lane. Give me the freaking ball. So a lot of it's based on situations right there. It's no big deal that every good team has volatile players on their roster, and that's why they're a good team. I can't tell me, and yes, the year in Jazz basketball, we used to have often fights in practice. Now, the question is...
Well, who fought the most? That's what I want to know.
Oh, my God. Let me see. Where did we start? Let me see. A long time ago, it would be John Stockton versus John Crotty. It would be Stockton versus Delaney Rudd.
The little guys.
Scott, you know why little guys.
Wait, you keep naming John Stockton.
I know John Stockton's
just,
in all these.
Is it just John Stockton versus the whole team?
No, not at all. And then there's the mailman, of course. He was so strong, the guys would bounce off him. So it would be Call versus Mike Brown.
Right.
It would be Call versus Thurl. When I say fights, I mean like squaring off and someone maybe.
Thurl Bailey fought? Come on.
Well, you know, he was a competitive player.
Yeah. Okay.
When I say
all right.
Yo, competitive, absolutely. Yeah, they get,
what about get, Mark Eaton? Did anyone mess with Mark Eaton?
No, the late great Mark Eaton was absolutely
no way.
As crazy as everybody was, they're not that crazy.
Yeah,
Mark Eaton, God bless his soul, was at 7'4", 295 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's one of the, what about Mark Eaton? You know, it's interesting now, Scott, they talk about it and Alex, about a screen assist ratio. In other words, Rudy Gobert sets these great screens to give daylight to Donovan Mitchell and to Joe Ingles and to Jordan Clarkson. Commendable. I love it. However, in yesteryear, there was no stat like that. Picture Mark Eaton giving daylight to John Stockton on a pick and roll. When I say impossible, it was almost impossible if you're guarding John Stockton on a pick and roll and Mark was the screener, which he was often. We call it a sprint screen, is that he would give the dribble at daylight, and the original defender on ball, he'd have no chance of making a play. So now John has a hop dribble coming down, freezing the big man in the coverage for that pocket jump shot. And these are all things that, again, good teams do this all the time as far as executing. It's not really set plays. You know, you want to say it's your four-down play, two to the side play. It's basketball concepts. And the better teams like the Jazz, the better teams, ironically, like the Bulls right now, where they're executing in the Eastern Conference, that they get it. They're trying to play off instincts, but also playing off the power of fundamentals.
Gosh dang it. Coach Gordy Chiesa does it again. And we're really looking forward to being able to have these Jazz Insider previews and breakdowns of the games from the day before here on Unrivaled. We really appreciate it, Coach. We're looking forward to talking to you all season.
You know, one thing, though, I do have a list today for you guys.
Oh, there's a list?
Oh, a list, absolutely.
Let me hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear what your list
is. Go. In honor of Joe Ingles, tomorrow at Scott, Joe Ingles, he makes three rainbow threes. It'll be his 1,000th three-point career.
With just three more?
Three more, yeah. Right. 997.
Okay.
All right, so the learning point. So with that said, this is the top 10 all-time Utah Jazz franchise leaders in most accurate three-point shots. I want to go accurate because Joe's involved in this also. All right, accurate. Number 10, Bojan Bogdanović shooting from three-point range career, 40.2.
Not bad.
Number 9, George Hill, 40.3. Kyle Korver, played for the Jazz for four years.
Only number 8?
8, yeah.
Wow.
40.5. Number 7, Thabo Sefolosha, 40.7% three-point shooter.
Thabo.
Number 6, Richard Jefferson, 40.9. Number 5, Randy Foy, 41%. Number 4, former Jazz man, now 76ers, George Niang, 41%. Number 3, also tied with George Niang, but he had more attempts. Jonas Jerebko.
Oh, yeah, Jerebko for sure. Now, was there a minimum amount of attempts? I feel like Jefferson snuck into the list for no reason. I mean, my heavens.
No, 100 attempts.
Okay, 100 attempts?
Yeah, 100.
Big Al took 100 threes at least?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's all he shot.
It.
Come on.
So, Jonas Jerebko, 41.4%, and number 2 now. The Aussie with the swag, Joe Ingles.
That's Joe Ingles.
Southpaw, 41.5, which is tremendous.
Who's
41.5 from three-point range, and the all-time greatest Utah Jazz three-point shooter. And before I say his name, I'll just give you what the late great Hotwell would say, horny for three.
Yeah, oh. Hornacek. You can't leave. Scott's going to be going.
Jeff Hornacek shot for his career, 42.8%
wow.
from the three-point range. And the last point is this, quickly, is that I have a question for you guys.
Yeah,
we got an
question.
Answer.
Ready?
Yeah.
I know you guys are very smart people. What is the NBA three-point line? What is the corner three distance?
Oh, the corner
what
three.
What is it?
I'm going to say it's 30. I'm going to say it's, no, I'm going to say it's 29 and a half feet.
Corner three. What
corner
do you mean,
three.
Scott?
30.6.
I'm glad you guys don't work for NASA, because we be going to Judah.
Pluto.
We go to Pluto right now.
Judah.
Instead of going to Pluto's
Mars. Nice this time of year. Come
Wait,
on.
What is it then, Coach?
All right. The corner three. For the listeners right now who are driving off the road listening
right.
to you guys, unfortunately, on I-15, 22 feet.
Oh,
corner three.
Corner. You said corner? Oh,
corner.
I didn't hear corner.
And the arc three. The arc three
what
is 23 feet,
oh.
9 inches.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, then shooting from the logo, I was thinking that Lou logo
hey,
shot.
Gordy, I can tell you how long
coach,
a football field is.
Oh, I know you can. No, right. So, and then if you're really a basketball junkie, a thing called the ABA back in the 70s with that iconic red, white, and blue ball. Their three-point line, which was absolutely sensational, was 25 feet.
Yeah, that's a long That's long as a coach. We appreciate it. We're going to get out, and we're going to let you do your thing, and then we're going to talk to you again next week, same time, same bat channel, Coach. We're glad
Thank
to talk
you.
To you.
Peace out, guys.
All right, there's Coach Gordy Chiesa. So glad to have him here on the Zone Sports Network. He is our Jazz Insider for today.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.